Good afternoon and welcome to the 2017 CFL Draft Conference Call. Your host is Mr. Lucas Barrett. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 2017 CFL Draft Call with TSN's Dwayne Ford and Marshall Ferguson. With the 2017 CFL Draft 5 days away, Dwayne and Marshall are here to answer any questions and provide analysis on the draft, prospects, team needs, and anything surrounding the draft itself. Today, we will go straight to Q&As with Dwayne and Marshall. When asking a question, please direct your question to either Dwayne and or Marshall. We're going to go straight to Q&A, so please, Mode, if you could turn the line over, that would be great.
Certainly. Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If at any time you wish to cancel your question, please press the pound sign. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register for questions. We thank you for your patience. Our first question is from Murray McCormick from the Regional Leader Post. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Murray here. Dwayne, this is for you. Obviously, going to be a Riders-specific question. One of the big things, the Riders have 9 picks in this draft. What do you think impact this draft can have on this team going forward with that many picks in the draft?
Well, obviously, it's going to be valuable for them. I think we recognize that last year was a year where overall Canadian talent and depth was an area that needs to continue to be addressed, wasn't an area of strength for the team last year. So the hope is certainly to beef that up. Now, at the same time, I think there's depth in this draft. I think, however, there's probably a question at some key positions of how many guys are necessarily going to emerge as starters in the Canadian Football League. It's not necessarily a great draft in the offensive line, not necessarily a great draft at receiver as well, so kind of your typical Canadian positions. Chris Jones is the kind of guy, though, that I think can take advantage of that because he's shown a creativity in the way that he'll use his Canadians, and it may vary from week to week. So he's a guy who may be able to capitalize on that a little bit and get some specific parts that he can play around with how to use in that Rider roster.
What position do you think that you have to bolster in the most in the draft, Dwayne?
You know, again, with Saskatchewan, I don't know if I would label one position specifically, just because of the way that Chris has demonstrated that he'll use his Canadians. Now, again, I mean, that may be a question of not necessarily having clear-cut starters at certain positions as to why it sort of changed from week to week. At times last year, you know, anytime if you have a chance to get one of the top O-linemen out of this class, then maybe you'll try to do that because that's a position where I think every team feels comfortable knowing that they can trot some guys out there. Obviously, Saskatchewan's a team that has lost some guys over the last few years in terms of their Canadian offensive line depth. There's some pretty good defensive linemen in this draft, and so when you look at opportunities for a team that has multiple picks, a position where you may be able to add some bodies, that might be a place to look as well.
Just the last one. How do you assess Josiah St. John being the first overall pick last year and what he went through and what he's accomplished? Is that one of those things we call a draft bust, or how do we sort of assess what happened with him?
It's too early to say that. I think that really what happened last year was a case where there wasn't a clear number one pick, and in a lot of ways, Saskatchewan was a team that found themselves trying to trade the pick, but because there wasn't a clear number one guy that everybody was trying to get, there wasn't necessarily a market for people trying to move up to number one. And so, you know, I mean, they took a shot on a guy who, in terms of potential, you hope may develop, at least into having a chance to play tackle. At least you hope he'll be able to play inside. But, you know, drafting the guy that they see as having a pretty good ceiling. So it's early. You hope that Josiah will develop, but a little early to label him as a bust. But at the same time, probably you take a little bit of a hit when you look at the performance of some of the other guys drafted last year. Alex Singleton, obviously one in the first round that jumps out a little bit as a guy that was an impact player and would have helped on any roster.
Okay, thanks, Tony. I'll let some other people ask a few questions. Thanks for your help.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Our following question is from Ted Wyman from Winnipeg Sun Post Media. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Dwayne, I was wondering if you could give a thought on who the Bombers might look at with that first pick, and if you think it might be defensive line. You mentioned how good the defensive line crop is right now.
Yeah, again, it's wide open. My early inclination is that they might go defensive line. One of the guys that stands out to me is a guy who may be more readily available than some of the guys that have signed NFL deals and so on is Faith Akakiti from Iowa. Has definitely demonstrated, after bouncing around a little bit earlier in his career in terms of whether he was going to be a defensive end in a 3-4, whether he was going to play inside, I think really established himself as a pretty good inside player, pretty athletic kid. In terms of body type, I think he's a little more suited to the CFL than the NFL. So a guy who I think is likely to be here sooner than later, and to me would seem to kind of fit with the Bombers ratio wise that he's a guy that I look at as a fit for the first pick. As to whether that's the direction they go or not, I'm not sure, but that's certainly one that I could see slotting in.
Where do you think, Dwayne, that Cameron Judge fits into this draft?
Judge for me is certainly one of the top couple of linebackers in this draft. It's not a great class of linebackers. Judge and Christoph Malumba-Shimanga from Maine are kind of the guys that stand out. Judge didn't necessarily play a ton on defense at UCLA, but very good special teams player. So, obviously that's of value here. And athletically, he's among the elite guys in this draft athletically. And that to me tends to be what separates for Canadian linebackers typically, as to really whether they're capable of playing in this league or not, right? You've got lots of guys who are good CIS linebackers, but the speed when you get to the CFL level proves to be a challenge for a lot of guys. Judge athletically is a guy that I think may be able to handle that, and so there's some upside there that he may be a guy that that can play some reps for you on defense as well. So, I wouldn't be surprised to see him as the first linebacker off the board. And certainly should be one of the first couple of linebackers picked.
Thanks for that. And I just wanted to get your thoughts quickly on the offensive line class. I think that's always pretty high on people's lists, and there's certainly a few there that could go in the first round.
It's an interesting offensive line class in that I don't think they're necessarily a ton of high-end guys. When you look over the history of this class a little bit, this is a draft class that, because of guys basically retiring from football, lost some very good players. And then when you have guys that have stepped up, obviously Justin Senior at Mississippi State being one of those, Jeff Gray being another, well, those are the guys that have the uncertain futures because of Senior being drafted by Seattle, Gray signing with Green Bay. That there's not certainty in terms of the availability of those guys. I mentioned guys retiring. Ryan Dowell, who is a starter at the University of Virginia, is a guy on this draft list who had played, retired because of concussions. Eddie Meredith, multiple-time All-Canadian at Western, was a guy that retired after his fourth year when he graduated from Western, elected not to play what would have been his draft year this year. And so it has thinned out the group a little bit, but I think there are still some other guys that can play, will contribute. Darius Bledek obviously helps to add some depth to this class. Mason Woods is a guy that teams are going to look at. I like the two kids from University of Calgary, obviously a school that's had a pretty good history in terms of producing Canadian offensive linemen. Braden Schramm, I think, helped himself at the combine. Jordan Filippelli, and again, history of that program, knowing you're looking at what are going to be well-coached guys. I think there are some guys there. It's just going to be interesting to see now, again, with top guys out of the mix, where everybody falls, because every team is going to have different likes, different preferences in terms of how they grade these guys.
Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Our following question is from Tim Baines from Post Media. Please go ahead.
First, thanks for doing this, guys. Much appreciated. Question is for both Dwayne and Marshall. With Ottawa picking at number 9, where do you see them possibly going with that pick? Possibly a lot of depth on defensive line seems like a logical pick, but maybe talk a bit about where they might go and suggest a couple of guys that might be available at that spot.
Yeah, I'll let Marshall lead off with this one. I've been doing too much talking.
No, it's all good. To me, Tim, I agree with you on the defensive line kind of summary. I think that it's probably, and I think Dwayne would probably agree with this, one of the deeper groups that's available in this draft, just in terms of interior pass rushers, even though you're probably looking at, you know, Eli Ankoo from UCLA not being a guy that you're going to see real quickly. But, I mean, if Kwaku Boateng or a Fabian Foot kind of guy is available, even a project like Kay Okafor at a St. FX, I don't know if you would be able to just turn the page and say, yeah, we'll take somebody that we can see down the line, because I think those guys could legitimately kind of backfill your depth at that national ratio spot pretty quickly. So to me, defensive line is somewhere they might look. And then, I mean, you know Nate Behar as well as anybody. It'd be kind of hard if they do want to add to depth at receiver to possibly not take a look at a guy like that. And I don't know, you know, necessarily how long he's going to last at this point, whether Winnipeg looks at him with their basically Drew Willey pick essentially down the road here. If you have that second first round pick that you want to use on a receiver after you go with the line, or if Winnipeg goes with two spots on the line, is there still a receiver available at 9th overall? But I think those are the two spots that I would look at. And those are some of the names, is kind of those three national guys from, you know, two from the OUA in Boateng and Foot and Kay Okafor. And then at the receiver spot, just obviously the top two guys that have kind of separated themselves at this point.
Just wondered as well, you mentioned Eli Ankoo. Is he a guy that that might go as early as the first round, or is he a guy that teams might let slide a bit?
Yeah, I was just, you know, again, Dwayne would know better on this because he's been covering it for longer. But when I was looking back at the history of it, a guy that is you know, a priority undrafted free agent in the NFL who signs within the first, it's crazy how fast it happens, within the first 10, 15 minutes there after everything gets done. Those guys typically stick for, you know, whether it's 1 year or 3 or 5. And so it is going to impact his draft stock a little bit. I don't think it's going to slide him like to the 5th or 6th or something crazy like that. But by the time, and I kind of feel the same about everybody who got those priority undrafted free agent spots, the Jeff Frays and Anthony Alclairs and all the rest, if you get to the 3rd, maybe the 4th round, and you're still staring down the barrel of realizing that you could add that guy to possibly being on your roster in 2 years, well, it's not the most rewarding thing in the world. I mean, Hamilton cut Elroy Douglas yesterday, who was their 41st overall pick last year. So why not take a shot on a guy that you think has top-end talent that might show up, like a Lyndon Gaydosh or David Foucault or players of that nature? So I think he'll slide a little bit, Tim, but I don't think it's going to be to the point where we're wondering why teams don't like him. Because when you watch him, you know, like, he's your classic 330-pound dancing bear at defensive tackle that can chase people around and cause havoc. So I think teams probably like him more than people realize. And, again, he's a realistic opportunity in the top end of the 2 rounds to kick things off, I believe.
Just one question for Dwayne. Looking at the receiver class, you talk about it not being overly deep, but certainly quality there with Behar, Vandervoort, Picton, and maybe a couple of guys, the developmental project.
Mm-hmm.
What is there a stigma about receivers? Teams are not so inclined to take them in the first round?
No, I don't think that at all. I mean, you look historically in the Canadian Football League draft, that in terms of starting positions, obviously, historically, number one has been the offensive line. That's been the position where Canadians are most represented as starters, and receiver has typically been number two. We've had some drafts where you've had a fair number of receivers taken early. I think it just depends a little bit on the makeup of the class, right? Where, for example, you know that there's going to be kind of a finite number of sure things on the offensive line. And so that seems to be everybody's priority every year. I mean, we joke all the time that offensive linemen in the CFL draft are kind of like quarterbacks in the NFL draft, right? Like they're kind of the marquee guys. And so once you get one or two teams early in the first round that take a couple of the blue chip guys, anybody who's thinking about taking one now all of a sudden jumps in, and it creates a little bit of a run on those guys. And I think that's where in some years you've seen receivers maybe get pushed down a little bit. This is a year where, you know, there's not necessarily the same situation on the offensive line, but I could see a couple of the receivers getting, getting a look in the first round of this draft. Again, you know, I mean, another, you talk about guys pulling out and changing the draft and so on. Rashawn Simonize, who is, in my opinion, the best receiver in this draft class, had, had a failed drug test that caused him to be bumped to 2018. That, you know, I mean, quite frankly, on draft day, that benefits guys like Nate Bahar, Danny Vandervoort, and so on. So, so it'll be interesting. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple of those guys go within the first nine picks.
Just one more quick question, follow up to that. Bahar took it personally that, that he's not the number one ranked receiver in the draft. How do you, what do you think of Nate Bahar?
I like him. You know what? He's an interesting guy to me in that, you know, he's one of those that the thing that catches you instantly is he's a guy who has worked hard and showed up to be physically prepared. You know, very fit. He knows his way around the weight room, which with all due respect to some of our receiver friends, they don't always at the college level, right? Sometimes that's something guys have to figure out once they sort of get to a level of playing against men and recognize, okay, I need to be a little bigger, a little stronger. This is a guy who figured it out early. You know, runs good routes. He has good feet. I think there's some versatility there to be able to play inside or outside. I know to some, you know, you might like him to be a little bit taller, but I think he's a guy in terms of physicality and so on that, that may be able to play some reps for you in the slot, may be able to contribute a little bit on special teams as well. So, you know, so I mean, I think he's a guy that's going to be in the mix. As for rankings, I think young guys, yeah, sometimes take them personally, but you come to realize that that the rankings don't mean a thing.
Thanks again for doing this, guys.
Pleasure.
Thank you. A following question is from Rod Pedersen from CKRM Regina. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. I'll echo what Tim said. Thanks for doing this. Dwayne, if you were a general manager, given all the variables of the NFL component and this and that, who would you take first overall?
It's still a hard question. I know you're gonna think that I'm copping out on you, Rod, but it depends so much on your roster, honestly. And this is one of the things that makes the CFL draft so fascinating to me. I mean, one of the things I say all the time is, you know, I think if you compared 9 CFL draft boards, you would see more variation in 9 CFL draft boards than you would see in, you know, your 30 NFL draft boards in terms of, say, ranking a top 50. They would just be so drastically different because there are so many factors at play. You know, everybody has different Canadian positions and so on. Everybody's rosters are in a different state in terms of where people are at contract-wise, who's retiring, and so on. You know, I mean, probably the best answer that I could give you, you know, I mean, Fasa Kakiti is a guy that to me stands out a little bit. He's a guy that I like, that I think is likely to be here, that plays in a position where most teams are going to use a Canadian as an interior defensive lineman. You know, so in that way, I think he becomes kind of a safer pick. But again, like it varies so much depending on the team. You look at a team like Winnipeg holding the number one pick right now with 2 of the first 6 picks. You know, they can maybe afford to play around a little bit. I don't think it's a secret given the structure of CFL free agency that teams tend to favor hometown guys a little bit, that for a team like Winnipeg, they may be able to gamble earlier on a guy like Jeff Gray than other teams might. And in a rare year where Winnipeg has those 2 first rounders, you know, you may go, especially after Saskatchewan Dembski them a couple of years ago, that they may want to really get the hometown guy. That, you know, do you think, okay, we'll take someone else at 1 who will be here right away and try and get Gray at 6, or do you worry about someone undercutting you before that 6th pick and maybe take Jeff Gray at 1 and see what's there at 6? I'm not sure.
No, it's a good answer. And secondly, a little off the board, how did you feel about Arash putting your name forth for the CFL commissioner job?
Flattered. Definitely, you know, I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's something that I would be interested in. It's, you know, I'm not going to spend much time on this call certainly talking about it, but, you know, maybe once we survive draft week that, yeah, it's something that I would be interested in discussing.
I appreciate your answers. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Our following question is from Miguel Bujol from La Presse. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for doing this. First off, a question for Dwayne. The two guys from Quebec that have tryouts or even have been drafted, Justin Senior and Anthony Auclair, where would you think a team might roll the dice in the draft to land one of those two guys?
You know, they're both unique guys within this draft. And, you know, as Marshall talked about earlier, you know, you get to a certain point in the draft where it becomes almost a balance between, okay, what is the likelihood of this guy coming back from the NFL and being available to make my roster versus, say, the player who's available in whether it's round three, round four, whatever it may be, versus the guy who's available at that point being able to make my roster, right? And if you hit a point where you kind of go, okay, I think the likelihood of Justin Senior being in the CFL in 2 or 3 years is greater than the likelihood of player X developing into a CFL player in 2 or 3 years, the likelihood of Senior coming is greater, then that's kind of the point where you make the decision to take him, right? And same thing with Auclair. Now, the thing with both of these guys that I think maybe makes someone take them a little earlier, you know, where typically, you know, I would say round three, round four is kind of where you're thinking, particularly for a guy like Senior who's been drafted. I'm not sure what Auclair got in terms of upfront money to sort of know what the commitment is to him in Tampa Bay, but you know, again, as Marshall said, a guy who was snapped up pretty quickly that, you know, that he's got a reasonable chance of sticking around down there. But, you know, Auclair as a tight end with some versatility, he can do some fullback things, he can do some slot back things, he can line up as a tight end, you know, in your short yardage, your double tight sets, whatever it may be, is somewhat unique, right? And so that makes him a little bit more valuable. Justin Senior is a guy who has played a lot of tackle at the Division I level. Now, we know with Canadian guys in the past, that hasn't necessarily translated to being able to play tackle up here, but with the hope that he might be a guy that can play tackle, again, if you can plug a Canadian in that spot, that has added value. And so that's the kind of thing that, you know, and again, Senior and what is not necessarily an overwhelming offensive line class, those are the kinds of things that may sneak those guys up the order a little bit.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Thank you. Once again, please press star one at this time for any questions or comments. Our following question is from Dan Ralph from the Canadian Press. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I'll ask this to both Dwayne and Marshall, please. Given what happened on the weekend, where does how does that affect a kid like Darius Bladek's grade going into Sunday? Would he now be a bona fide first round prospect?
Marshall, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So I personally, Dan, it's a good question because he's one of those strange guys who's found his nationality and magically has appeared, and now he's going to be he's viewed as being somebody that is of interest because, you know, teams obviously have done their background. They know the research on him. They understand him. But, yeah, he's going to get bumped forward because he's not an NFL draft eligible guy this year. And even when he was, I mean, he was a minicamp tryout guy with the Baltimore Ravens. So he was kind of an example of somebody that would have been probably pushed back, like Dwayne was just talking about, to third, fourth round kind of thing, possibly, if he was in the NFL draft. But because it wasn't his year this year, because he had to wait out the year, now we're at this point where he's just available. Like, he's just a guy that you can draft and you can use him, and he wants to be here. I mean, I've been impressed by him at the combine as well as afterwards, chatting a couple of times with just how much he just wants to be a football player and how much he just wants to be a part of the Canadian Football League, and he's embraced the whole idea of it. And so I think that he does become a legitimate first round guy. I've personally, despite, you know, the strength of the interior three in the depth chart, I've had him to Edmonton in my first couple of mock drafts. Just because when I look across, you know, obviously we've been talking about the Bombers and the Riders at 1 and 2 and what they want to do with their offensive and defensive line. The Lions might be a little bit of a wild card at that 3 spot. I think Hamilton, personally, I mean, they could go anywhere with that thing. They could go D-tackle as well. But when it comes to just a fit for a guy that you could see landing in the league and staying, you know, hopefully 10 years staying healthy and playing for you. Every team drafts to have interior depth across their offensive line, but I think Bledek is a guy that could challenge even, you know, a Hunter Stewart or somebody like that. I don't know. At BC or a player in Edmonton as well that could be working maybe in that left guard spot. So I think he is a guy that he might have struggled mightily when it came to one-on-ones a little bit at the combine, but I don't know who didn't. I mean, Mason Woods was kind of in that same boat. And so both of those guys are kind of in the same area for me where it's kind of mid to late first round into mid to late second round.
Great. Thank you. Dwayne?
Yeah, I mean, similar thoughts. I would think that, you know, that he's probably a – realistically, he's got to be a top 15 guy, I would think. You know, I mean, depending how much stock you put in the combine, and I think most teams, most CFL scouts and general managers would tell you the combine is just one day in sort of a series of days, right, of watching guys play. Like, you've watched game film, and this is sort of another game where you're evaluating those guys. One thing I will say where I think a lot of people would acknowledge that that Bledek and Mason Woods struggled at the combine in the one-on-ones. I mean, two points I'll make. Number one, one-on-ones, O-line versus D-line, when it's pass rush, very much a defensive drill. So if an offensive lineman has a good day at those, then he's really established himself, right? So in a way, you start off at a disadvantage. But the other thing about those two kids in particular is you're talking about two guys that have never, ever played with the defensive line a yard off the ball, right? Mason Woods being a BC kid, they play American rules, played at an American school. Bledek, growing up, playing all his high school football, college football down south, is used to having those guys right there. Now, people think that the yard off is going to be beneficial to the offensive lineman. And I would contend that it's not, especially when you're not used to it, because it gives the D lineman that much time and space to kind of set up his move. And so I think for those guys to be evaluated in that situation when it's kind of the first time they're dealing with that, I think that would explain some of the challenges they had. So when you look at, you know, sort of what a guy like Darius Bledek is physically, obviously, you know, impressed with again, physical preparation. Like, you look at a guy who played much heavier in college than he showed up at the combine. And I think part of that is recognizing what it takes to be a Canadian Football League offensive lineman versus a National Football League or even an NCAA offensive lineman. Well-spoken guy, committed, hardworking, intelligent, that, as Marshall said, a guy who I think impressed a lot of teams with that part of who he is, and a willingness to learn and adjust, I think, to the world of Canadian football that again, like, I would think he's a guy who goes within the top 15 in part because of the constant demand for offensive linemen.
And to follow up, if I may, Dwayne, his time away, I mean, he's had to wait to get to this point. Are there questions about him because he's been away from football for a while?
You know, I really don't think that, because he has remained committed to playing football. You know, it's not a case of a guy who maybe, you know, comes out of college, has other job opportunities, and chooses to explore some of those other options for a year and comes back to football. I mean, this is a guy who's been away from it because he chose to enter the NFL draft a year early, so gave up his last year of college eligibility, got into a couple of camps, things didn't work out, wasn't in time with citizenship to get in the CFL supplemental draft, so he was kind of forced out for a year. But again, when you see the condition that he showed up in at the combine, you recognize that this is a guy who's been training. This isn't a guy who's been sitting around for the last year. This is a guy who's been preparing to play football.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. A following question is from Bill Woolwich from TSN 1040 Vancouver. Please go ahead.
Good morning for Dwayne. I wonder if you could give me an assessment of BC's Canadian content in a year in which they have already lost Westerman and Lecumbo, and what you think they might do at 3-7.
You know, without getting too specific, obviously, it is kind of nice given the guys they've lost, given the direction they want to go with the ratio and so on, to have those two first round picks. You know, I mean, it could be a case where they try to package those two to move up even higher in the draft. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I would think that for a team that has already suggested that they'd like to go with four Canadians on the offensive line, you're in a spot where you can never have too much depth on the O-line. So with one of those two picks, you know, I think historically when you look at teams having two picks in the first round, it's almost a bit of a surprise if one of them doesn't end up being an offensive lineman. So I think that's a possibility at one of those two spots. You know, they did well at receiver last year in the draft when you look at adding guys like Shaq Johnson, Brett Blasko to their mix. So those guys will help out depth-wise in terms of the receiver spots. The other part of it may be looking to continue to add Canadian depth. You know, I don't think you're necessarily going to see the Canadians play as much on their D-line. I think that was part of the willingness to let Westerman go in free agency. They've still got David Menard. They've still got Matt Sford there as guys that can contribute a little bit. But, you know, in terms of their second pick, it's honestly hard to say what direction they're going to go. I know there's been some talk about the Lions playing two Canadians in their secondary at free safety and possibly at field corner as well. I don't necessarily know, though, that there's a DB that you go to within the first few picks, within the first seven picks of this draft. It's always very hard, I think, with defensive backs. It takes a pretty unique guy to crack the first round, to me, as a DB. So tough to say where they may go with that second one, but I would think that offensive line depth would be of some value to them if they want to start four.
Is Mason Woods worth a first-round grade to you? You were kind of soft on him a little bit a few minutes ago when you talked about the fact that he has played mostly four-down football in his life.
Yeah, and that for me isn't a knock on Mason Woods. Honestly, that's just an explanation, I think, of maybe some of the struggles. You know, a guy comes in as a multi-year starter at a Division I school and then maybe struggles a little bit at the combine, and people are looking for reasons why. And I just see that as a reason why for him a little bit is in terms of that explanation. You know, I mean, for me, in terms of a personal evaluation, I get a little wary sometimes of taller offensive linemen just because of the leverage issues, right? In terms of some of the defensive tackles that you're going to face, you know, and I'm talking particularly when you're a guard, because Mason Woods to me is a guy who projects as a guard, not as a tackle, despite his height. That I think sometimes there can be challenges just in terms of leverage when you're facing some shorter defensive tackles that can get under you a little bit. And so that's just a personal, I guess, assessment for me. But, you know, I think he's a guy who could still certainly get interest in the first round of this draft. He's a guy who's played at a high level of competition. He's been a starter. Again, you know, I mean, Mason Woods is a guy who kind of looks the part. You know, a guy who weighed in, I think, at close to 320, but if you saw him from a distance, you know, you would think that he was 275. Like, he's a pretty lean guy, so his frame could be heavier. He'll get stronger and so on. So he's, in terms of that potential, I think he's a guy who will garner interest.
Thanks for doing this, guys.
Thank you. Our following question is from Jeff Crever from CFL.ca. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Appreciate your time this afternoon. I'll ask this one for Marsh. Last year, the first seven picks in the draft all ended up playing and making contributions in their first year since being drafted. Has that kind of become an expectation for general managers that guys they're taking in the first round are going to be available to them and can make an impact in their first year in the league?
Yeah, I think that's the goal. That's what every general manager should want to accomplish with that, right? Because when Dwayne and I are talking about those fringe guys who are kind of dancing through, whether it's rookie minicamp or the priority undrafted free agent perspective as well, the GMs are going to want somebody that they can actually use. And as we all know, the guessing game is how quickly they're going to be here and all the rest. But for me personally, like if I was picking, I would want guys in the first round who were in that sweet spot of really great talent and feasibly could be used quickly if they are ready, if you deem them to be ready, but guys that you just expect to be consistent for you. Like, I don't know. I think we try to compare the NFL draft to the CFL draft too much, where we say, is he going to be a day one starter? Is he going to be this or that? Like, if Danny Vandervoort gets taken by the Tiger Cats in the fourth pick in the first round, I don't think he's going to be a day one starter. I don't think he's going to be contributing the second that he gets there. But that isn't really the goal. Like, your goal is to add quality Canadian content, national content, where you can help your ratio and you can have somebody who, when he gets put into the game, there's not this massive void in your entire kind of roster at that point. So I think a guy like Vandervoort's a good example of somebody that you would want to have probably in that type of lineup that's going to be able to sustain for you and that's worthy of a first-round pick based on talent, but also based on the fact that he's going to be able to contribute to you, be consistent, and be there for you pretty much right away whenever you would like to use him. So I think that is kind of the first round, to answer your question, Jeff. I know it's a long way to get there, but it's what they would want from a guy like that. It's what they look for, in the first 15 picks that Dwayne was talking about there with Mason Woods and some of the other guys like Darius Bledek. And once you get outside of that, I mean, it's all a guessing game, and everybody's kind of playing the same game, which makes it such a monopoly.
And if I may quickly follow up, I mean, you talk about a guy that hit on quite a few of those criteria you mentioned. What was it that caused a player like Taylor Loeffler to drop to the third round last year? And do you see a guy like that in this year's draft that could fall but could make an impact that hasn't been talked about as much?
Yeah, Taylor Loeffler is just kind of crazy. Like, I don't know how everybody didn't just, and maybe Dwayne would be a good follow-up on this in a second, but how we didn't just look at him and go, yeah, tall, lanky, rangy, physical, plays kind of angry, plays the ball pretty well in the air, and he fell the third round. So that, maybe Robert Woodson, like, I think people might really like Dondre Wright. If you're talking about a defensive back, they might slide a little bit. Like, I don't know if I can see Woodson getting past the second round as it stands right now, even if people start, you know, getting weird and deciding to reach and try to go after things. But yeah, he might be that guy that falls a little bit, even though he does not deserve to fall. Like, he had an exceptional combine, I thought, and did everything that he needed to that was required of him and all the rest. But yeah, to me, that might be the guy who has a little bit of that. He doesn't deserve to fall, but he might, similar to Taylor Loeffler. And then maybe even Kwaku Boateng, too. Like, if a team looks at Kay Okafor and sees a higher ceiling, or sees Fabian Foote and thinks that they can play him quicker, or that he might be usable on special teams quicker than Kwaku Boateng, then maybe Kwaku kind of unjustifiably starts to drop backwards into the 15 to 20 range, and then maybe gets to, I can't see him getting to 25 or anything like that, but that would be one of those guys that I would watch that deserves to be in that first 15 that might just get squeezed a little bit if teams look at the feasibility of using somebody in specific situations sooner.
Yeah, if I can just add on to that, I would say Marshall's right on in terms of some of the names, but I think when you look at the kind of the assessment, one of the challenges for a guy like Taylor Loeffler is you have to consider the way that teams are using their Canadians. And so you've seen more of a trend towards teams wanting to use a lot of times five Americans in their secondary has kind of been the direction for teams in certain years. You know, teams want that, you know, they talk about being multiple, right? Having the flexibility of guys who can shift between different positions, linebackers who can drop to free safety, safeties who can come down and play in the box, that interchangeability amongst your parts. And so I think that for a guy like Taylor Loeffler, much like Robert Woodson, where if people look at him as a certain thing, you kind of look at him as a defensive back, they're not sure that he necessarily fits into the defensive schemes until you get Taylor Loeffler here and he kind of has a chance to do more of those things and show more of those things. One of the other challenges I would think for Taylor Loeffler last year as well is that people may have looked at his injury history a little bit. Like, you're talking about a guy that was basically forced out of football for a couple of years in college during his time at Boise before he came back with UBC. So I think that was a little bit of a factor in what went on with Loeffler last year. I don't think it was a case that people thought he wasn't a good football player, but just there were some other factors at play. And again, certainly you may see some of that with Woodson, some of the other DBs this year. If you're not sure of their flexibility to sort of be able to move around and play other spots and so on as a DB, I mean, there just aren't a lot of starting jobs for defensive backs in the Canadian Football League. And, you know, so there's not a value early in the draft to those guys for every team. Whereas you can say for every team, there's a value in Canadian offensive linemen. Again, I would say a guy like Kwaku Boateng, the challenge for him is I think a lot of teams will look at him as a guy who doesn't have a position, right? I mean, what he is a Canadian defensive end. He's a little bit undersized. You know, it's going to be a challenge for him. I don't necessarily see him as a guy who shifts back to linebacker and plays in space, even though in terms of body type, that might be a little bit more what he's suited to do. So that's, you know, that's where I agree completely that, that I think that's a guy that you could see fall despite the fact that he's been a very good CIS football player.
Thanks, Dwayne. Thanks, Marsh.
Thank you. Once again, please press star one at this time if you have a question. Our following question is from Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for doing this. I kind of had the same question I think Jeff just asked, but it might be a little bit different, and this is for both Marsh and Dwayne. Off the board picks, is there anyone who you think instead of Mike Fall that maybe isn't getting the love, whether it be in the rankings or just in general, that sticks out in your mind?
I'll let Marsh go first there.
Yeah, but to me, off the board, guys, it's the funnest because when you look back through, like Keenan LaFrance was a great example to me this year of a fifth, sixth round pick who has a tangible effect on not only a game, but a playoff game and puts you in a position where you can win yourself a great cup, right? So those guys that get taken fifth, sixth, or sometimes just as important as the guys who, as we all know, are taken first, second. To me, like when I look through my board, I really wonder, like a great mystery to me is Kay Okafor from St. FX, mostly just because I fell in love with talking to him. Like when you actually sit down and interview with him, he just talks like the type of guy that I feel like I'd love to have in my locker room and be around. His frame is freakish and he tested super well, so it's like you check all of those boxes. And then when I watched him in the one-on-ones at the combine and also in game film, he's only been playing the game for 5 years, so he's the type of person to me that if he had been playing for another 3 years, if he had been playing, not slight against the AUS in any way, but if he had been playing in the OUA, just because I know it from playing in the OUA, if he had been there with a really, really great defensive line coach like a Dennis McPhee when he was at Waterloo or something, he would probably look completely different to me. So he's kind of a wild card because I think, to me, he has the highest ceiling maybe in the entire draft, and he could go to me as early as the late teens and as late as like the fifth, sixth round somewhere back there where he ends up all of a sudden in 2 years we're going, where did that guy come from? And, you know, look how he has, you know, four tackles in a game that actually matters and he's holding down a spot when somebody gets injured or something. So I really like him. And the other one to me that is similar to what Dwayne was just talking about, which, by the way, I completely agree about, Kwaku Boateng. It's like an exceptional U Sports CIS player that just doesn't have a natural fit, is Adam Lawrence, who's the defensive back from Calgary. He was a Western Regional guy who I kind of wrote off a little bit when I originally went through the 2016 games that the Dinos played this past year, because I thought that a lot of his production was basically just coming from the fact that he played boundary corner next to Robbie Woodson. And so there was a lot of stuff where they were just avoiding Woodson at all costs, and he was getting a lot of tackles, he was getting a lot of balls his way, and he plays the ball pretty well in the air. But on special teams, like, he doesn't really fit. He's an undersized guy. He doesn't run all that well. But then at the combine, and I know the combine's a dangerous place to singularly evaluate somebody, he just looked like he should have been a national combine invitee in the first place. The way that he played the football was aggressive, was jamming receivers, all the rest. So to me, those are my two kind of guys from both sides of the country. Is Kay Okafor is kind of a great mystery at that defensive line spot based on his development. And Adam Lawrence, he doesn't really fit, and he's not really the size that you would want to have in a player that you're going to try to use on special teams, because we all know that Dream was saying you're not going to use him as a starting on defensive backfield anytime soon. But he just, he kind of played himself into the conversation for me as somebody we're not talking about, and we probably won't, and he might go undrafted. But if he does get drafted, he can play.
Awesome. Wayne, maybe this one for you. There's a debate here in Winnipeg about, you know, the Bombers are going to employ three Americans on their offensive line. They have Michael Couture in waiting. They have Patrick Neufeld as a resource. But the debate is whether or not that first overall pick is tradable. And the people who disagree with it being tradable will say that, you know, first overall pick, it's a gift. You get exactly who you want. You know who you want. But given, like, as you mentioned before, just the Bombers makeup, you know, where they might be thinking, and I fall on the other side, I say maybe it is a pick that you can get rid of. What's your take on owning that first overall pick and whether you think it's a good move to ditch it?
I think if you have a guy that you clearly want, right, and the CFL draft, again, this is where it becomes fascinating every year with all the trades and so on, is it almost seems like every team has their one guy that they want to get, and so you get the trades where, you know, somebody's moving up to get that one guy. Like, I know last year, for example, with Hamilton, once Brandon Revenberg was available at three, Hamilton was going to make a move to get to three. And you get these kinds of things all the time, to the point where we have those years where every pick in the first round gets traded. If you've got a guy that you know is your guy, that's sort of, if, you know, if you could have the first pick, you'd take him. If he was there when you're picking at nine, you'd take him, that he's just your guy. Then yeah, I think, certainly you want to make sure that you keep that first pick. Now, if you can turn that pick into multiple assets by maybe moving down, getting a couple of picks, and knowing that you may get a couple of roster guys, maybe still get the guy you want. For example, if you're just moving down a couple of spots, say BC offers you 3 and 7 to move up to number one or something like that, and you can still get your guy at three, or still get a similar guy at three, which could be a case in this draft where there's some depth, but maybe not necessarily a clear number one guy, then I think that there's a case to be made for trading it. It just depends how badly does somebody else want that pick to sort of make it worth your while to take that gamble.
This last one for me, for both you guys. How relevant are Canadian receivers? I feel like in the last few years, there's been a shift away from it in the sense of the draft in particular. Do you notice the same thing? And do you think, how valuable is a Canadian wide receiver now? I mean, obviously every Canadian that can play is valuable, but, you know, when you look at how teams are employing their air attack, how relevant are receivers in this draft and trying to find that gem early on?
To me, it's a good question, because it does feel like when we get to July, August, at times, you know, guys aren't chipping in a whole bunch. We can go back even further, like way, way back in the time machine, and talk Sam Jaeger and players of that type, and how their impact on a game seems like it's less and less. But to me, I almost feel like there's been a splitting since I've really been covering it, Jeff, where it's like the top end guys we love. Like, if you are fortunate to be able to get somebody who you can, you know, think about playing rather quickly, or, you know, playing a couple years down the road and they'll produce for you consistently, then I think we fall in love with, like, Brian Jones is the one that pops into my mind, where I think as soon as I saw Brian Jones get drafted fourth overall last year to the Argos, I immediately thought, just because I played with Danny Vandervoort, I thought, man, he's probably going to be right in that realm of that 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there after the lineman run goes, after the big guys start to fall off the board. I think that the top end is still, we really, really value it, and we typically value it in a spot where you really need a receiver, where you really need that depth. Like Giovanni Aprilia in Hamilton, I don't think he's ready to be like a full-time consistent rotation starter as I've seen so far. With Andy Fantuz being out, I think that a team like the Tiger Cats, and there's a different team every year, Dwayne knows that, there's a different team every year that falls in love with the receiver, or that really needs the receiver, and so we value that guy. But you're right about when you get to second, third, fourth round, and to me that's your Mitchell Pictons, guys that are really good football players at the university level, but you're going to draft them to eventually basically play special teams and to have 5 catches a season for you and hope that they last in the league and that they're happy being in the league for 5 to 10 years kind of thing. So that top end, I still think is highly valued. I still think that we need those guys. I still think those guys are special. But you're right. After that, to me, there's a bit of a drop off in terms of how much you care about them and where you want to use them.
Yeah, I think similarly thinking, if you've got a guy who's going to be a high-end starter, yeah, certainly that increases the value. Just looking bigger picture, I'm not sure if it's really what you're asking, but I think that when you look trend-wise, like I mentioned earlier, historically, receiver has been second to offensive line in terms of Canadian starters. But I think when you look at more recent years in terms of the way things are trending in terms of guys coming out of college and so on, I think you're starting to see some more Canadians who can play on the defensive line. You're starting to see those guys coming out of school a little bit more. So you're starting to, you know, it's creating another position where you've got more Canadian starters and they're going to be taken away from somewhere else, whether it's the offensive line or whether it's at receiver. One of the other ones to me is just when you look at the changing trend of the game. And, you know, I mean, you probably heard me as a running back last year go on about it sometimes in broadcasts is sort of sounding the death knell of the run game, right? That the ball is in the air all the time. And so when you kind of look at teams using American defensive backs and using a lot of their DIs on defense and so on, that you know, it becomes a case maybe in terms of matchups where all of a sudden teams are thinking they're going to use more American receivers to be able to match up, be able to go head-to-head with those guys. And what you're seeing is because the ball isn't necessarily being run quite as much, you know, I think you may see a little bit more willingness from teams where it becomes using a Canadian at running back instead of a Canadian receiver. And, you know, so I think that impacts certainly where guys are going to be drafted as well, right?
Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate this.
Thank you. Our following question is from Darren Bowling from TSN 1290. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Kudos. I know you've been going at it for well over 45 minutes here. You've covered everything I was going to ask. So, again, I thank you for your time. Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, please press star 1 at this time for any questions or comments. So we have no further questions registered at this time. Oh, I'm sorry. We do have a question from Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press. Please go ahead.
Sorry, guys. I didn't want to lie to you and say it was my last question before because one popped into my mind. But just a quick one. How do you feel the CBA and the whole, you know, one, you know, term of contract affects drafting? I know it's a big thing with old linemen that you get them to a point where, you know, they become your all-stars, and then they start searching out money for free agency. How do you feel that affected the clubs across the board, you know, when going into these drafts?
Geography is a much bigger factor in terms of drafting now than it was even when you had, you know, sort of option years and things like that protected teams a little bit more in terms of being able to hold on to their guys. But just in general, I mean, for me, to be blunt, one of my biggest beefs in terms of the CFL is that I think the free agency structure is flawed, and that you've got a league, and you hit the nail on the head, Jeff, that, you know, particularly with your Canadians, the guys that you're drafting, like in any league, in any sport, when you've got a salary cap, things like, you know, sort of talent identification, recruitment, development, and so on. So basically you're scouting and drafting. Those things should become key. And when you're talking about a salary cap structure, the ability to develop guys from within so that when a guy prices himself out, you can move on, you've got the next guy developed and so on, the ability to retain your own players and so on, that I don't think, as long as there's a salary cap, I don't think that having completely unrestricted free agency is the ideal scenario. And so what it has led to when you've got that unrestricted free agency is, you're absolutely right, a lot of times, because guys get through their first contract, their rookie contract, and now they're unrestricted. They're free to go. There's no compensation. There's no right to match or anything like that. And so you get nervous about, when you're Winnipeg, for example, you get nervous about drafting a guy who may want to go home to Vancouver or may want to go home to Toronto. And it affects every team in the league that certainly, all things being equal, you know, I mean, you'd always say, all things being equal, you'll take the hometown guy, maybe it gets you some publicity, sells some tickets, whatever. But now it's sort of, you know, all other factors even being close, you're going to take the hometown guy because of the likelihood that you'll be able to get him to sign a second contract and stay, so that you're not essentially developing your Canadians for someone else.
Awesome. Sounds like that's top of the line for you and your bid for commission. I appreciate it.
It's on the list.
Thank you. Our following question is from Dan Ralph from the Canadian Press. Please go ahead.
Yeah, and I apologize if I repeat a question as I got on the call late. But, gentlemen, I just wanted you to assess this year's draft class, and if you had to put money on who's going to go first overall, who that would be. And I'll start with Marshall.
Yeah, so we were talking a little bit earlier just about Faith Cockatoo. I think Dwayne and I are both kind of high on him just because he has a fit. I still love the idea of Jeff Gray. Again, we were just talking about the hometown guy. I mean, there's no better fit. The scary part is obviously that Jeff Gray just looks like a Green Bay Packer. I mean, he's going to grow the beard out, and he'll be playing with no sleeves if he ever gets a chance to dress in the cold weather and all the rest. Like, he looks like that guy. He he obviously was highly touted by them because they were in Winnipeg working him out, and of course they drafted him. He did the visit and all that. So I think, to me, the defensive line, whether or not they move their way out of there, is up for debate, because the defensive line, I think, is probably the strongest overall group in this draft. But Fitz Cockatoo, he feels like he was a guy who could be around sooner rather than later, and he kind of fits, and his body style works and all of that, and then you can still kind of reach with your second pick in that first round for the Bombers and see whether or not you can get somebody who might show up later on or might not show up at all, but it's kind of worth the risk, and I think that might be a Jeff Gray kind of person.
Great.
Yeah, and I have a lot of the same thoughts. I think, you know, as we talked about earlier, I mean, when you're the Bombers and you know you have two of the first six picks, Do you gamble on taking Jeff Gray first, knowing that it may be a little time before you see him, but also with the comfort that you may get another roster player at six? So it's a rare situation for the Bombers who, you know, I mean, I think one of the greatest things Kyle Walters has done is he has rebuilt a team that for generations has struggled in terms of its Canadian talent, and now they're pretty good in terms of their Canadian talent, and huge kudos to Kyle for that they're in a position of having two picks and maybe being able to wait on one. The hometown guy having that value. At the same time, you look at Faith Akakitee and as a guy who can step in, you know, I mean, his value may be boosted a little bit. Like there's a little bit of scuttlebutt regardless of what happens with his NFL stuff that Ili Anku from UCLA, you know, he's signed with Houston. But there's some talk that he may not play in the CFL at all, that he may pursue other opportunities if the NFL thing doesn't work out. And that's, you know, that's sort of the stuff we're tracking right now. But if he's a guy who, you know, states that he's not looking to play up here, that he may move on to other things, then that increases the value for some of the other defensive linemen, maybe increases a little bit of the urgency to take those guys as well.
I mean, overall, though, how would you rate this draft class? I mean, it seems like you talk to nine different GMs and you get nine different prognoses, now, understanding that they could be playing games, but I don't get the sense that there's a consensus anything in this draft.
Yeah, I think that's a great assessment of it. That, you know, for me, having done this for a while, there's I don't know if there's been a year where there's, I mean, maybe last year, but where there's been less consensus in terms of who goes number one. But at the same time, I think that there's some depth in this draft. You know, like there's a group of guys within the first couple of rounds that, you know, in a lot of years you kind of look and go, okay, the nine first round picks probably come from this group of 12 guys, you know, and the top 18 picks probably come sort of from this group of 25 guys that you can narrow it down. I think it's a little bit more wide open, particularly with the first round this year where you'd have to look at to fill those nine picks. It wouldn't be, you know, your list would have to be more like 15 guys.
Yeah.
You know, say if you were to poll, as you said, like poll the nine teams in the league and give me your top nine prospects, you know, where other years, if you compared all the teams' lists, there would be fewer names,
yeah,
fewer variation in the names. I think this year there's definitely more variation in that sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further questions registered at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. Barrett.
Thanks, everyone. I would like to thank everyone who joined the call today, as well as Dwayne and Marshall for giving up their time. The audio of this call will be made available within the hour. Just a note, the CFL draft will be televised on TSN beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday, as well as on RDS and TSN Go. Details will be announced later this week. If anyone has any other questions in regards to the CFL draft, please feel free to reach out and contact myself. And just want to wish everyone a great day. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.